Hi, welcome to the Berry Nation podcast, where we support the Berry Nation, the bariatric community, with humor, humility, and honesty. Whoa! Why does it feel like we haven't done a podcast in a year?
130 whatever episodes in, and this is the first time you've messed the intro up?
This is a completely new world. Good Lord. This is the first Berry Nation podcast you're listening to. Hi, hello, welcome. That was the first time I messed up our intro. Imagine that. Ever. Oh my goodness.
But I messed it up once, so Nat, it's your turn. You've got to mess it up once and then we'll all be good.
I'm good. I'll take my winning streak.
Oh my God. Unbelievable. Well, welcome again, friends. My name is April.
I'm Jason.
I'm Natalie.
We are very excited to have this conversation with you all today. We are going to talk about how we can have a very happy holiday. And we're going to approach this in kind of a little bit of a different way. Like, we understand that, you know, we can make our holidays, you know, festive by changing up what we eat and, you know, kind of approaching some things maybe in a little bit of a different way, making sure our gifts aren't food-based. But really, we want to talk today about some things that tend to make the holidays feel a little bit heavier. And then what we can do to really, you know, avoid those feelings or acknowledge them and approach them differently. So there's going to be three kind of big things that we're going to talk about today. And our goal with this conversation is to just help you lower the temperature this holiday. That's like one of my favorite things. I think I've been saying it a lot this year, but I am such a hot-headed person. When I get, you know, upset or angry or emotional, I tend to just like, I just boil, and that all or nothing thinking kicks in. It's not good for me, right? And I tend to not be able to see all of the solutions that are presented to me. So for me, when I say like, I need to lower the temperature, I need to like take that heat down. I need to get to the place where I understand why I'm feeling the way that I'm doing or why I'm acting the way that I am so that I can make different decisions. So really, we want to lower the temp. We want to help you lower the temperature this holiday. Hi friends, it's April. We are so excited to officially announce that ProCare Health is the official vitamin of Berry Nation. We were introduced to ProCare Health at the first Bariatric Society retreat in San Diego, and we have all fallen in love with our product and with the people behind the company. Jason, Natalie, and I have all made the switch to ProCare Health daily bariatric multivitamins, and we are seeing huge results. We invite you to check out ProCare Health by visiting them online at www.procarenow.com and use the code BERRYNATION for 10% off your order. And you guys, this even applies to vitamin subscription services. So if you want your vitamins delivered every month or every 90 days, that 10% off is going to apply to that subscription. See what I mean about patient forward, patient centered? ProCare is amazing, and we are so excited to be partnered with them. Welcome to the Berry Nation family, ProCare Health. So before we dive in, I think we'll just say, you know, we are going to be talking about traditions, trauma, and grief. We are not going to be sharing anything about traumatic experience that we have experienced, but if listening and talking about what we can do if trauma is a part of our life might be triggering for you, please go ahead and skip this episode or skip the part where we are talking about trauma. So I just want to make that be known, because we want you to enjoy this podcast safely. All right. Should we just dive in?
Yes, ma'am.
Let's do it. All right. So three things that can really make the holidays feel heavy: tradition, trauma, and grief, right? These are three kind of big things that we can experience in our life, especially during the holidays, and it can really make for a difficult situation. So we're going to go kind of one by one with these. We're going to talk about what we mean by each three of these things. And then we're going to shift to offer some strategies that we can all try if we are experiencing these things during the holidays. All right. So our very first one, tradition. We all have holiday traditions, right? Many of them probably involve food, but right, these traditions can really start to feel heavy when they no longer serve us. right? So if your family does things, if there's food that's being served, or if there's something that's happening and you're participating in it because it's tradition, but it's not really serving its purpose, that could really be, right, be dragging down the holidays. So like, you know, Jason, now, what are some traditions that maybe you used to do that you don't do anymore now that you've kind of become a bariatric patient?
I don't think that I have any that I don't do anymore, but there was definitely one that I stopped doing for a period of time, especially the first year. Like my first Christmas post-op, I was 3 months post-op. So, I mean, that's a very new post-opper, as you guys know, like, and our tradition was, making and decorating cookies together. I mean, that was like a big thing in our house, as it is for so many people. And I just told my family, cause it was usually led by me, because who doesn't love cookies? And I just told my family, I'm not doing it this year. So you guys can figure it out. You guys can bring the cookies. I'm not doing it this year. I don't trust myself to not make myself sick. I don't trust myself to not eat a bunch of cookies because I have so many emotions tied to this activity. And I'm very glad that I did that. because last year, which was my second Christmas, post-op, I could do it. My family asked, you know, hey, do you want to do the cookies? Do you want us to do the cookies? You know? And I said, no, I feel like I can do them now. Like, I don't feel like it's going to be a big weight on me. And I did it, and I had, you know, maybe one or two cookies that night, and I felt okay. But I think, yeah, for me, it's just like being able to say no 1 year and then coming back to it the next year and being like, no, I can do that this year. Like, that's okay. You don't have to totally like swear off of it forever, but just knowing when to say that you can't handle it, I think is like really powerful in general.
Do you know what pain management options are available for your upcoming bariatric surgery? YourXFactor.com provides resources and information to help you plan, including what non-opioid options are available. Check it out and talk to your doctor about your plan today.
Well, and you also have to realize too that it's okay to not be able to do it 1 year, be able to do it the next year, and then not be able to do it the year after that. It's going to be a fluid thing. Like, you, and don't be hard on yourself because you realize you can't do it. There's so much strength in realizing something ahead of time and then, you know, avoiding it so that it doesn't become a problem. So that was one of the biggest things that I've noticed in kind of what I do, because I've always been the meat guy. Like, I've always fried a turkey or smoked a turkey or done, you know, all the things. Like, I've always done all that. And I know that fried turkey is not good for me. And so I've stopped. I quit. I just told everybody, don't look for me to do that. I'll do side dishes now because I can control what I do as a side dish, and I can make a healthy choice in that. And that way I can, you know, do the best I can to make sure that whatever there is available for me to eat that at that time is going to align more to my goals. So sticking to side dishes has been good for me. I've done a lot of, you know, green bean casserole type stuff, and just, you know, just vegetables in general, just stuff that I would, you know, what I would rather normally do so that it's not sitting so heavy on my stomach. So that's been something that's been a big shift, because you guys know I love to cook for people and provide, you know, food for people. So not doing that was an adjustment, a serious adjustment. But at the same time, I, you know, much like April, like what you say, I had to think about what I wanted most over what I wanted right then. Like, the joy and love language that I have to provide things for people in that way, it may help those people, but it doesn't help me. So, you know, in a way that helps everyone, I just chose to defer cooking the meat and just go with side dishes.
Yeah. And it's, as you were talking too, I thought of another one that kind of affected the whole family, similar to what you did, Jason. It's like, stockings are a really big deal in my family, almost more than like the presents. And they used to be filled with candy and snacks, and it used to just be like the food thing. And again, that first year after my surgery, I just said, look, I don't want candy. If you do get me candy, get me like 2 to 3 pieces of like really good chocolate. Like, I don't want that Hershey's shit, you know, like I wanted really good stuff. And, so I didn't get any candy in my stocking that year. And then, yeah, the following years, like last year, and then this year again, we're not focusing on the candy and the snacks and treats. We're getting like, I think we got like some of the Godiva, like they come in like a stick, but they're truffles, you know? So everyone got their little like Godiva truffles in their stocking. And then we're just doing, you know, like the rest is just like little gifts and silly things. But that was something where I was like, this doesn't serve me anymore. And I know that other people have said that they don't even like having this in their stocking. So I'm okay to take the brunt of the backlash if people want to push back on it, but no candy for me. And if you do, it better be good.
Buy your own crappy Hershey chocolate.
I was just like, why is this a thing? I don't want Russell Stovers in my the marshmallow, you know, like I don't want that.
Okay. Oh, I chocolate covered peach.
Okay. I mean, I'm sorry. Oh my God. I think you like stab me in the heart there a little bit. Oh,
it's having an aneurysm over here.
I'm not eating it. It's just more for you.
That's true. Well, I too. And I'm so, they are like legit one of my favorite things, but I digress. I had to have kind of the exact same conversation with my family too. And it can be overwhelming when you are pushing back on tradition because, oh my God, it's tradition. And we always do these things. But there was every tradition had a first time. A tradition became a tradition because you or your family or a group of people decided to try something new. So if those old traditions are not serving us anymore in a positive way, if they're not serving our bariatric goals, and if staying aligned to our bariatric life is important to us, then we need to say, hey, this tradition doesn't kind of really fit with, you know, with my values and how I'm trying to live anymore. Can we tweak? Can we do it differently? And it's hard to kind of have those conversations, but usually what I found is I psych myself up more about the conversation than the actual, like what happened. I worry so much about like, oh, this could go so bad, or, oh, instead just having that honest conversation, you know, with people. And I mean, every single time that I've asked for something like that, the response is, oh yes, that's a great idea. Yeah, we can try that. And it's not that you're committing to doing it forever. You're just saying, hey, can we try it this one time and see if maybe this is better?
Well, and you're not even really saying that the whole family has to change it. You're just asking for yourself, just opt out of me when you're sprinkling everything in the stockings, just hold off on mine and we'll do something a little different. Like it's not, you're not asking for something way out of the realm. So I think that may cause a lot of anxiety with people in the same way it did with you in feeling like those are going to be monumental conversations when in fact, you're not asking everyone to change things. You're just asking for a little bit of an amendment for yourself. So if you bring it up in that way, I think it's a little better of a conversation versus having to, you know, strike this whole 10 commandments of what, you know, the new traditions of the holidays are going to be. I don't think it doesn't have to be that heavy.
Nope.
And I didn't even make it like a big conversation. It was just like I don't really want that. Cause we were just shopping, right? As you do prior to Christmas. And my mom's like, oh, which one, like which bag of Hershey's should we get for the stocking? And I was like, get whatever you want. Like, I don't really want it. And then I like walked away cause I was going to go shop for something else. And we got in the car and she was like, so you really don't want chocolate in your stocking? And I was like, no, I don't. I really don't want it. Yeah. Thank you. But I don't.
Yeah.
And it was a simple, like one and done. And then the next year I said, okay, I might want a little bit of chocolate. Cause I kind of missed it, you know? But I was like, but get me something good. Like I'll buy it. Like you don't even have to buy it. Like I'll buy the good chocolate for myself. And it kind of spiraled. Like everyone else was like, oh, you got Godiva in yours. Why did I get Hershey's? You know, like And I was like, well, I bought it. So, but yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be like a big conversation. It can just be a casual, like, nope, I really don't want that in my stocking.
Yep. No,
that's it.
You know, and where traditions can really kind of throw us off, and it always comes back to this all or nothing mindset, right? We think that if we don't do the holidays this very specific traditional way, it's just not going to be the holidays. But that's the all or nothing mindset thinking. That's black and white. And that is you really setting yourself up to not have a great holiday, because your holiday can be phenomenal. It can be wonderful. It can be filled with rich moments and experiences by doing something different, right? By trying something new. And really it just takes that honest conversation, right? What we talk about all the time, you really have to be honest about, okay, can I participate in this tradition and will it serve me, or this really is not, you know, going well for me. And we all know how difficult it can be to have these conversations for the first time, but the more you practice, the easier they get. And it really is a way that you are advocating for yourself and your needs. You know, another very important thing along our bariatric journey.
Yeah, so. I just started to say advocating for yourself is not specific to the hospital and to doctors. Like, you can advocate for yourself in your own family, at work, at home, like whatever that may be. Please just advocate for yourself, because if you don't stand up and say something, it's not that they don't care. It's just that they don't know. You're actually educating people into something that they just aren't thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just like what we were talking about before, like starting your own traditions. Like for Thanksgiving, it used to just be like a meal, and then you just kind of sit around and feel icky for a long time, and then you go to bed. Like that used to be what Thanksgiving was about. Yeah. And the last couple of years it's been, okay, we're gonna eat dinner, we're gonna like, let's go outside and let's go sit by the bonfire, like away from the food. And then like, let's come inside when we're cold and let's play board games. And like, mm-hmm. It just became more about being together instead of the food. And that I think started really when myself and my cousin had surgery, because we were like, we don't want to sit around. It's not about the food for us anymore. Like, yeah. Let's go do something. Let's go like interact with each other, because really that's what it's all about. It's not about the food, even though we're programmed to think that way.
That's right. Yeah. It's making food the side dish and not the main course, baby.
Woo. That was one of the best things you've ever said. I mean, you say a lot of great things, but that just stuck in my brain, and I was like, dang, but it's so true, right? So yeah. Much of the holidays is food centered. And again, like, you know, our family histories are tied to food, our culture is tied to food. It's not that that's a bad thing. It's a wonderful thing that your family is in a position where, you know, you can afford that type of meal, right? But it doesn't have to be the main event to the holiday. It can be a part and a piece of it. It doesn't need to be the thing. And I'm with you, Nat, right? And I know, Jason, you guys have really branched out too. I feel like, you know, especially this year, our Thanksgiving and just our holidays are much more rich in memories than they ever have been. But it's because we are making a conscious effort to make them about the moment and the memories and the people, not just the food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. Awesome. All right, my friends. Well, let's move on to kind of the next thing that can make the holidays heavy. And that is trauma and traumatic experiences, right? Many of us experience things during the holidays that were traumatic or that really impacted us in a negative way. And we need to acknowledge that these things have happened during the holidays. And we also need to acknowledge that we maybe are being asked or being forced to be around people that were a part of those traumatic experiences. And really there's three things that we can do to acknowledge and to kind of move through this, right? And it is just, we have to acknowledge that we experienced something traumatic or that someone is triggering a traumatic response in us. We have to understand that no is a complete sentence. We can decline to participate. We can decline to go. We can decline to spend time with people or to be at a certain place. We're allowed to do that. And the third thing that we strongly advocate for is seeking out professional help. Find a therapist that can help you acknowledge and move through the trauma that you have experienced, because that it's going to be paramount to making sure that your holidays in the future are more friendly to you. But this is the work that you really have to do to move through them.
And even if the trauma didn't happen specifically around a holiday, but the person involved in that trauma will be at that holiday, mm-hmm. it's okay to recognize that as well. And really admitting the fact that, you know, there was a traumatic experience, not just trying to brush it off for better sake of the family or whatever that may be. Like, there's power in acknowledging that as well, to sit back and actually sit through and say, no, this was traumatic, because nobody can explain what's traumatic to you. Everybody's trauma is going to look different. So if something traumatic happened to you and you don't feel like anybody else is going to recognize that, it's not up to them. It's up to you. As long as you're protecting yourself in the way that that works for you, you need to do that, because it's very important for your safety, your mental health, and your well-being to step, you know, to separate yourself from those traumatic, you know, from further trauma in that situation.
Okay, hear me out. I went into surgery thinking it would be the only treatment I would need to overcome my chronic disease of obesity. About 6 months into my journey, I realized I was wrong. I was missing community, I was missing education from the experts, and I was missing a safe place to just go and connect with other patients who understood what I was going through. That's why Jason, Natalie, and I created the Berry Nation membership community. It is a safe and inclusive place for patients to gather with one another, to learn from the experts and each other. Check out the Berry Nation community today by visiting https://berrynation.mn.co to see what we have created. In Berry Nation, you belong, and you don't have to do this journey alone.
Yeah, and I know we're kind of speaking to like preparation, but sometimes we can't prepare ourselves to be in the same situation, whatever that may be, or maybe you're in the same room as a person that may have caused you some harm. Also know that like you can remove yourself from the area. I always say that a good timeout does wonders. Just like toddlers need a timeout, so do adults. So I also just want to let you guys know that like if there are moments where like, you know, a relative walks through the door and you're like, oh shit, like I did not know that you were going to be here, remove yourself, give yourself some time, some space and grace to do the work that, you know, Jason and April are talking about by acknowledging and really grounding yourself. Take that time. And then if you can, you know, re-enter the space, and you do not have to like really talk to them. You don't have to interact with them. But also if it is too much to handle, you can also leave. You can say, you know what? Thank you for having me. This was a wonderful time. It is time for me to go. And you don't have to give explanations. You don't have to do anything, but do what's right for you in the moment. And just know that we also realize that you cannot always be prepared for everything because life happens.
Yep. And I would just also say there were some, my family celebrates Christmas, and there were some Christmases that were, they were traumatic. Some things happened that involved my family members at some of our Christmases. And that happened like, I don't know, 30 years ago at this point. You know, I'm 40. Oh my God, am I 41? I don't even know how old I am. I'm 41. You know, and there are still some moments where I think about that, and it makes me sad, you know, that those things happened during that period of time. And the reason I'm thinking about it is because it's the holidays. So, you know, I think what's been really helpful for me is I have learned to process and move through these things that happened. Is I've had a lot of really honest conversations with my family. I've been to a lot of therapy. I've gotten lots of professional help. But I also acknowledge that I might not ever not remember those instances. And that's okay, right? I'm going to remember them and I'm going to go, oh man, yeah, that was really hard. That was really painful. That was really scary. That was bad. Mm-hmm. And then I can move on. And I don't have to beat myself up thinking like, why am I not over this yet? That's not the point of this. The point is that I can get to the point where it's like, okay, you know, that happened, and feel good about how it was, you know, handled and how we moved through it, you know, as a family and as an individual. But, you know, for me and the help that I've gotten, it's just like, you might not ever not, you know, you might not ever forget that. And that's okay. It's just a part of you.
Well, therapy and you know, another important thing to put in there is therapy's not to forget, it's to cope.
Yeah.
It doesn't teach you, you know, you don't just drop it out. It just teaches you coping skills and learning how to process and deal. But yeah, I mean, those memories will, I mean, they'll always be there, like they, yeah. And they may sting. But you know, it's a part of, you know, it's a part of you now. And that's something that you have to learn, like I said, with those coping skills to kind of address when it comes up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never liked that term forgive and forget, because forgetting is like a cop-out to me. Mm-hmm. I will never forget, but one day I can get to the point, and I'm not saying every time, this is also not to say that you have to forgive everyone, but it is nice when you get to the point where, okay, it's still painful, but I can forgive this person or this situation for happening or causing me harm. And that is what therapy helps you do. It helps you navigate those feelings, and those emotions, and seeing how you can get to that point of, okay, I'm going to forgive the situation, never going to forget it, because that's, yeah, not real. I don't think that's real. Yeah. But it does help, and professional help is there. There are, if you have problems seeking help through your provider, there's so many apps now. There's like BetterHelp, there's Cerebral, I think is one, where you can find someone pretty much on the spot to talk to. So if you're at an event and something bubbles up, you can go into those apps and text someone or call someone. So yeah, there are resources that are literally at our fingertips.
Yep. Yeah. And I would definitely, you know, if you check with your employer, you know, if you're working, sometimes these services are actually provided as a part of your employment package. And I found that out, oh my gosh, that was a couple months ago. We, you know, I'm in public education, and they provide this, like, yeah, talk text help, like it's, you know, text therapy to students. And somebody said, well, you do know that, like, you have access to that too as a staff member. And I was like, oh my God, I had no idea, right? Like, I just had no idea that was a thing. So, you know, don't be afraid to also, you know, reach out to your employer or see if these types of services are offered, because yeah, it's the only, yeah, therapy is the only reason I'm the human that I am today.
Well, yeah, because I know through my office, I get 6 free upfront counseling sessions, you know, to kind of figure out if it's a good fit, you know, with the therapist, yeah, or whatever, then I can kind of continue from there if I wanted to.
Yep.
So, I mean, yeah, it's definitely something to look into if you're working.
Yep. So if you are worried about trauma this holiday, these are the three things, just to recap, right? Acknowledge that it is happening and it is your, it is real for you. Decline to participate, decline to be around those people. And then third, seek out professional help to help you give the tools to understand that trauma, that experience, and how you can move through it. So, right. Sometimes that just can't be avoided. All right. The last thing that we are kind of excited. I mean, when I realized that I was going through this right after surgery, it was like the magical key that I had been missing. Grief is something that many of us experience during the holidays, right? We are either missing people who have passed from our life, we're missing spending time with people that we wish maybe lived closer, or we are grieving the loss of our relationship with food, right? Depending on where you're at along your bariatric journey. I know for me, it hit me like a ton of bricks, really the week after I had surgery. I realized that I was using food to cope in like every aspect of my life. And I absolutely was grieving the loss of that relationship. And I often describe my relationship with food was the longest, most like awful, horrible, negative, abusive relationship I'd ever been in my life, because that food was everything. And it was such an unhealthy relationship that I was in. And I had to go through that grief process for food. But when I finally knew what it was like, oh my gosh, okay, I'm not crazy. This is grief. This is what it is. And we know that we've blown a lot of people's minds with this conversation before, because people have told us like, oh my God, I didn't realize that that's what this is, but that's exactly what it is. So when we just know that that's what we are moving through, right? We can drop that pin, right? Like, nope, you are here. Now that I know that I'm here, how am I going to, plot my course off? So, grief is just a response to loss. It's usually applied to people. If we lose people, if we lose things, we can feel grief, but really it's the loss of a relationship, some type of relationship. And it is absolutely very tied to our bariatric journey. It's not just something, that other people experience. I mean, it's a human response to a loss of this relationship. And it is really common among, I think, bariatric patients, especially if, that relationship with food is something that resonates with you. So, our goal, for this part of our conversation is we just want to help you understand what the grief cycle is and what it could look like from a bariatric lens. And then if you know that, oh, I think I am probably grieving this, to give you the tools, for you to understand what that cycle is, so that you can also work your way through it.
Well, and also understanding that grief is healthy. Even though the relationship with food might not have been healthy, the grieving of that is healthy, because it's an organized process to get you to the other side of what you're going through. So, when people start thinking about that, people often want to beat themselves up because, now I'm grieving something that I can't do anymore. Like, I can't go eat, two dozen chicken wings and make myself feel better. But it's not about that. It's about, realizing what you're going through and taking the healthy steps to get to the other side.
Yeah. And Laura Grabo, she talks a lot about the power of naming these emotions. We never did that before. We never sat and named what we were going through. And so to be able to do that now, like April said, when you found out that it was called grief, suddenly it makes a little bit easier to navigate, because you actually know what it is. When you don't know what it is, it makes it very difficult to navigate and feel validated in that feeling, because it has a name. It has a name to it.
Yes. Well, yeah. The stages of grief are emotions, right? So not only
and the only thing we used to go through when we were emotional was the drive-through to make ourselves feel better. So we didn't go through, processing these emotions. We went through processing our order at Taco Bell and Burger King and, Wendy's and whatever that may be. So this is just a healthier way to cope with those things.
Yep, absolutely. Is grief kind of a part of your holidays? Do you experience grief during the holidays?
Yeah. Well, mine is more tradition-based, like the stuff that I used to want to do, and I was going to talk about that poignantly whenever we brought up the fact of traditions lost. Like, it's okay to grieve those too. Like, I grieve the fact that I don't get to cook mass meats for people, because I used to do 3 or 4, I would do 2 different turkeys, I'd do a brisket and some pulled pork, and I was up for 2-3 days before Thanksgiving and Christmas, cooking for people, because I just love it. So the fact that I don't do it anymore, when I get to the point now where it's time, when I start leading up to the time, I start fidgeting. Like, I'm looking around like I should be doing something. There's something I need to be doing right now. And especially now that it's just me and Sarah, if we don't go anywhere and it's just us here at the house, I really start tripping out, because I'm like, I need to be moving. Like, I need to go to the shed and get my stuff out and start getting to the store. And she's just looking at me like, what are you doing? Like, we're not going. I'm like, oh, never mind. Like, and I just sit down. I'm just sitting there. And she's like, well, you're awful fidgety. What's going on? And I'm like, I don't know. But it took me a second to realize, I should be doing all of these things. And I'm not doing it. So it's okay for you to grieve those traditions, even though it may not be something that aligns with your goal anymore. Because a lot of the traditions that we had for our family, for me, kind of went away when my mom passed, because she was she was the holidays for everybody and everything. And so kind of when she passed and we moved to Florida, so we're not even near family really anyway. And, Jordan left and the girls, went back home, and we just kind of, so now it's just we just don't really have a lot to do. So normally we'd try to travel or do something. So we're busy doing stuff, but it's just different. And it's okay to grieve that too. Like it's not just always going to be food centric that you grieve, but you know, it may be, and that's okay.
Nat, what about you?
Yeah. A lot of you guys know, if you've been listening for a while, my grandma passed away in 2020. So still very fresh for me and my family. And yeah, there's a lot of grief that happens. My grandma was very similar to Jason's mom. She was the holidays. That was just, she did everything. I talked about it on, I think my stories a little bit ago, but, my grandma was very music oriented. And so, she used to play in a quartet. And she had a friend who would invite us over for a Christmas party. And that Christmas party, you know, we'd eat and we'd chat, and then we'd all sit down and just start singing Christmas carols. Mm-hmm. And I miss that. And I didn't really think about that until this year, which is very weird, maybe because it just hasn't really felt like Christmas to me. And that was kind of my first, like, okay, this is Christmas now. And so, but there were a ton of little things like that where, you know, decorating my mantle and my tree reminds me of decorating my grandmother's house, or, you know, hearing Christmas carols reminds me of sitting around a coffee table, singing Christmas carols in some random person's living room. I don't even know. I mean, I know who it is, but it was very random. I was like 10, you know? So I just have these little things where I'm like, oh yeah, we used to do this. And it's kind of popping up more this year, I think, because I haven't done a lot of like Christmassy activities. And it is hard. It's hard to kind of navigate and recreate those traditions. I know that we kind of talked about it at the top, and it, the way that we made it sound may have made it sound easy, but it's not. And I acknowledge that. And I know April and Jason also do, but yeah, my family has just gone through a lot of changes. My parents are now closer. Like, there's just been a lot of change around the holidays, which makes the grief more difficult because I don't have like a solid space for the holidays right now. Like, it's still pretty chaotic. And so that makes me kind of yearn for the times that it was like, we go to grandma's house, we do this, we do that. Like, it was very set in stone. And so, yeah, I think this year it's just a lot of grieving for like the routine of knowing what I'm doing for Christmas.
Yeah. I was just going to say the only grief that I really experience sometimes during the holidays, and I don't even know if it's grief, but you know, you definitely, I had an idyllic childhood, and you just think back to like, oh gosh, you know, it was so magical. It was so, you know, and it is, and you're thinking about tradition and you're thinking about family, and you know, it can be heavy. But we have no choice other than to acknowledge it and to learn to work through it. And, mm-hmm. and you know, we get through it by going through it. Mm-hmm. Grow through what you go through, right? Another classic. So there are five stages in the grief cycle. Stage number one is denial. Stage number two is anger. Stage three is bargaining. Stage four is depression. And stage five is acceptance. So if we kind of understand what these stages are, we can pinpoint it. We can go, okay, this is where I'm at. Okay, now I know where I'm going to be in this process. And then you can work to navigate yourself through those other stages. So I'm just going to read an example of what bariatric grief could look like if you are maybe grieving the loss of food. So in that very first stage, in the denial stage, these could be something that you say or that you think. Right? That denial stage is like, oh, I don't use food in unhealthy ways. Like, I don't have a problem with it at all. Oh, so you're in the first stage, Jason. Excellent.
I was, yeah. It's after surgery, I was, because I was like, oh, I'm not addicted to food. I got a good shit.
Oh,
yeah. And then,
I was. Oh, girl, that was me in my pre-op. I was like, This will be a piece of cake.
Right?
Sounds really good right now.
Denial. Straight yep. denial. Right? Yep. So that's stage one, denial. Yeah, no, oh, trust me, I was, whew, yeah, I did this cycle in about 2 weeks time and it was like, oh my God, hit me like a ton of bricks. Second stage, anger. I can't believe I used food to cope. I am such a stupid person. I can't believe I let myself do that. I am just so mad at myself because I allowed this to happen. A lot of anger.
Or you get mad at yourself for having the surgery so you can't continue to do that to yourself. That's also another side of things because people get pissed off. What did I do? I can't believe I did this to myself. All I want is a cake and I can't have it. And it's not a mess. Oh, yeah.
Bingo! That was me to a T. I was like, I cannot believe I had to go through that. Oh, yeah. That anger. Real and raw, right? Then we move into the bargaining stage, right? Where we're trying to make a deal with ourselves and with our feelings and with our future. So it could sound something like this. Fine, I'll just live off of protein shakes for the rest of my life, right? Like, I can, if I can get to a healthy weight, then none of this is going to matter, right? Like, oh, if you're trying to make a deal with the devil, so to speak, right? To
which we also did.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yes. Right? So that bargaining stage is where you're really wrestling with, right, with the loss of that familiar relationship. And then the fourth stage is depression, right? I'm never going to figure this out, right? I'm just going to stop interacting with people. I'm just going to stop trying. I'm never going to understand this. Never going to work for me, right? Surgery is never going to work for me because I'm never going to be able to, you know, move past this. Mm-hmm. Can be very dark place. And I remember this too. I just remember thinking like, oh my God, you guys know me. I'm just my DNA is wired to be kind of happy and jovial. That's just who I am. And when I was in this stage, it was unlike anything I'd ever experienced ever. I have never been so sad. I've never been so down on myself and my decision to have surgery as I was in this stage. And it was in the depression stage that somebody gave me the gift of the grief cycle. Somebody said like, oh, you're grieving. Oh, what? Are you kidding me? This is what I'm doing. It was so powerful because I kind of had a sense of hope, right? It was like, oh, this is grief. Oh my gosh. And then for me, it's like, well, you know, grief is, you know, we move in and out of grief. Grief is just a part of the human experience. So this isn't something wrong with me. I'm grieving my loss of food, right? Mm-hmm. So to really understand that, you know, these are kind of the stations that we stop in along that grief cycle before arriving at that final kind of stage, acceptance. And it could sound kind of something like this. Well, I'm a bariatric patient. And if I want to have success, I need to commit to my bariatric life, right? There's no going back. I made the decision to have surgery. This is my life now, right? We accept the reality of the moment.
And don't think for 1 second that you can't get to one stage and find yourself falling back to another stage. Like, it is not cyclical in a way that you don't ever move from one, like you can only go forward and never go back. Yeah. Like, you may find yourself back in, you know, in any one of the stages at any point in time, and that's okay. The one thing about if you get to the acceptance stage and you find yourself getting back into the depression stage, a lot of people's initial reaction is to cut themselves off. You don't want to talk to anybody. You don't want anybody to talk to you. Nobody's got the answers. Nobody can tell you what you need to hear. And you just want to sit by yourself and just and sit in, you know, kind of the stew of anxiety and just kind of sit there and let it bubble. But the really what it comes down to is those people that you're shutting yourself off from are possibly some of the only people that can pull you out of what you're going through. So it's not necessarily that they're trying to tell you what you need to know, but they're just telling you things that, you know, that you're not alone. You've also, you know, that other people have been through this. And the only way you're going to learn how to do these things is by having these issues and learning to cope with them and go through them and learning other people's ways, you know, kind of like what we say about the recipe game. Like, you may need bits and pieces from other people's journeys to learn not only what you're going through, but how to get out. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And just because you have grieved something one time doesn't mean you won't grieve it again in the future.
No,
right? This is just, this is a human experience. This is not, you know, just something that bariatric patients go through. It's an experience that we are going to go through many times in our life. But the more that we understand this cycle, the more easily we can identify that we're in it. And we can really use this as an opportunity to explore our feelings, to name these emotions, and then to work ourselves through the cycle where we can get to the point where we accept the current reality.
Yeah, not everything's going to fit neatly back in the box. Some stuff's going to go back in, like when you try to put an air mattress that's already been inflated back into the box that came in. That shit's not going in without ripping a corner or tearing the tab off. Like, don't act like everything's just going to go back neatly in this little file folder like it's supposed to. Some boxes are going to look like they've been through hell.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So we hope this conversation maybe shed a little light onto something that you possibly could be worrying about this upcoming holiday season. And we hope that you found it, you know, helpful or valuable. You know, we want to acknowledge that the holidays can be very heavy. And if we allow our own temperatures to rise, it could really be a detriment. But if we're aware of these kind of big roadblocks that maybe could be coming our way, we can use some tools. We can, you know, use our bariatric tool, and we can use the mindset tools to really help us move through and have a phenomenal holiday.
Yeah,
right. And I think a really fun way for us to end our conversation today, and you guys don't know I was going to ask you this, so I will go first. I promise I will go first on this one. But I think it would be kind of fun to share. What is your favorite holiday memory? Like, what is that thing that just bubbles up in you that is just pure joy when you think about the holidays? And I'll go first.
I was like, I've got one if you guys are
ready.
No, go ahead.
So when my parents were remodeling their house here in Gig Harbor, they moved to the lake house, and they lived at the lake house for about 2 years, maybe a little bit longer. And we had two or three Christmases with them at the lake house. The lake house became our family home. And we were adults, right? I was 30 something, married. I think my sister might've been married at the time. Anyways, the lake is beautiful. And in the wintertime, nobody lives there, right? Only half the houses are occupied. And I can remember waking up, and for some reason, it just looked different. Like, the light coming through the blinds looked different. And I shot up out of bed and I was like, did it snow? And I opened up the blinds, and it was a winter wonderland. It snowed like a foot. It was absolutely beautiful. It was just stunning. And like if you live in the Northwest, a white Christmas is like all we ever pray for, right? It's like, oh God, we don't want a wet, rainy Christmas. We want a white Christmas. And you guys know I'm not emotional. And I just got some tears in my eyes. And I was like, oh my God, you know, of course I woke Grady up, and I was like, oh my God, it's a white Christmas. And I went and I flew down the hall. I busted open my sister's door. No, we're adults, granted. We are like 30, whatever. I'm like, Maria, oh my God. And I go over and I rip open her blinds. She's just like, holy shit, a white Christmas. And then my sister and I are two grown-ass adults. We went and knocked on my parents' door. And they're like, are you kidding me? Why are you knocking on our door? You are not like 9. And we crack open the door and we're like, there's ever waiting for you. And they're like, you got it. You know, they're like, oh my God, you kids are like going to kill us. Like, what? And we, you know, fling open their door, and they've got this beautiful balcony, and the whole lake is there, and it's snowing, and it's beautiful. My sister and I crawled into bed with my parents, and we just like snuggled as a family and watched the snow come down on Christmas morning. I mean, it was just like, oh my God. And it was the best Christmas gift I'd ever received. It's like the top memory for me when it comes to Christmas. And then of course, Grady, and I think she was married at the time, they walk into my parents' room and they're like, are you kidding me right now? Like, this is what you guys are doing. But then they ended up sitting at the end of the bed. So they just sat kind of at the end of the bed, and we were all in bed. We were just, you know, laughing and sharing, you know, Christmas memories. And yeah, it was wonderful. So that's my top memory. Top.
That's awesome.
Yep. Jason, what's yours?
Mine is probably like, I can't remember if I was 7 or 8, just being in, my thing used to be watching Christmas, just sitting at the, in, like, we had this glider recliner, and I would just sit in it and look at the tree, like stare at the tree, watch the lights, all the lights in the house would be off, and I'd just be sitting there. Which is funny, because when I was young, my mom used to say I was solar powered. So as soon as the sun went down, I was out. I was gone. Like, I rose and set with the sun. Like, as soon as the sun was going, I would just be like, lean over on the couch and be gone. And as soon as the sun came up, brighten up. But for whatever reason, at Christmas time, I would just sit for hours and just sit, stare at the lights like that. It wasn't really about like the presents and stuff under the tree or any of that. It was just about the fact, just the way everything looked, because she had like a big Christmas village she would put out. So all those were lit up and all that stuff. Just looking at all of that when I was little was just always so amazing to me. And, you know, me and my brother are only 2 years apart, and we were the worst about, we didn't share anything. Like, shit, that was not in our vocabulary. So they legitimately had to buy double of everything on Christmas to get both of us to not kill each other. So that was hilarious when it came time to everything, because everything was like, you could just tell that everything was double boxed or double whatever. And then when they would bring out, you know, the other things, it would just be, you know, double of everything again. So it was hilarious. But yeah, that's probably the best for me, was sitting and watching the tree like that.
Oh, awesome. I listening to Jason talk about the Christmas tree, my grandma also had a fantastic Christmas tree every year. She would do like the big old-fashioned bulbs with the tinfoil muffin liners around it, so it would make it look like an orb, like, so the lights looked like orbs on the tree. It was immaculate. Like, it was one of my favorite things. I would do the same thing as you, Jason. I would sit and turn off all the lights, and I would just sit by the tree. As far as like a real core memory, Christmas Eve was kind of the more like big thing. We'd always do presents and stuff, you know, Christmas Day, but the real celebration and like being around family was done on Christmas Eve for us, and it still kind of is. But one year, it's actually kind of two memories in one, but one year I think I was maybe 8 or 9, and we had all eaten our meals, and we're all sitting around in the living room around the Christmas tree, just kind of chatting and laughing. And my older cousins, Nick and Kelsey, went over to my grandma's piano and started playing, you know, Christmas carols that they had been learning, you know, at their lessons. And we started singing, I think it was Away in a Manger, because that was one of the ones they knew how to play. And we were just in a goofy mood, and we started creating like an interpretive dance to Away in a Manger. And I'm talking like my aunts and my uncles started doing it. Like, it was not the children that started this. It was like my uncles and my aunts and my mom. And we're singing, and it's like Away in a Manger, and like the hay was like hay, like around our face. We'd do little peace signs, and we would just like bright red faces, just like cracking up at each other and just like having the best time. And kind of to tie into that, we were also a NORAD home. So if you don't know what NORAD is, it's the satellites and like weather and stuff, but every Christmas Eve, they do Track Santa.
Oh, yeah.
So that was like my cousin Emily and I were very close in age. And that was our big Christmas thing, was like, we got to check where Santa is. And so we'd power up my grandma's Windows 98, you know, and sit and try to get on the internet. And we'd, you know, wait and try to track where Santa was. And it would always be this like really pixelated Santa in a sleigh, like all this thing. Yeah. And that's always a huge memory for me too, because we'd see where Santa was and the hour that we spent eating dinner, and we'd run back in, he's in France, like, and everyone would be like, oh, you know. So that was another like really big one, where I just remember being like a tiny kid on my grandma's really old computer looking up where Santa was. So
oh my God, dude, I love it. Well, and it's just so heartwarming to know that, you know, food has always been a huge part of all three of our lives, but none of our core Christmas memories are tied to food in any way. And I think, you know, if you're pre-op and you're listening to this and you're worried about that relationship with food going away or how you're going to handle it, or if you're post-op still kind of, you know, struggling with food or food traditions and that kind of thing, I would bet you probably have a lot of core memories that are not tied to food. And mm-hmm. if you just really, you know, connect with those memories, that's all the evidence that you need to know that you can move past these challenges. Mm-hmm. You can move past it. You've done it before, right? It's another tool that we can use to lower the temperature, right? When we think, oh, I'm never going to be able to do this. You've done something similar before. And mm-hmm. that all or nothing thinking is probably playing a really prominent role in that panic or in that feeling that you have that anxiety. But just know that, you know, we are doing it with you. Lots of people are doing it with you, and you can move through this. You can move through this time. You can lower the temperature on your holiday, and you can really connect with the people and the memories and the moments, and not be so tied to food. Awesome, my friends. Well, thank you for this amazing conversation.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, it really does feel like a hot minute since we've done this, but I don't know why, but I'm excited that we got the opportunity to do it now.
Absolutely.
Jason, my friend, you want to take us out?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you guys all so much for all of the support we've been receiving. We've kind of been receiving an influx of support and messages and things lately around the holidays, and we just appreciate it. We can't thank you guys enough, because like I said, and I always say, you guys supporting us, you know, it helps us just as much as we've ever helped you guys. So we thank you guys and appreciate it and continue to do so. And we'll keep continuing to do what we do. And mm-hmm. just remember, at the end of the day, you've got this, we've got you, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, friends. We hope you have a very happy holiday.
Bye, everybody. Bye.